Hello everyone, another episode. This is a little bit later in the week than usual, but it's still out nonetheless. This is the poetry of Chinua Achebe. I've only picked two of his poems, mainly because they're the ones I've taught the most. I have come across one or two of his others, but I think these two poems will do a really good job of showcasing what's so good about him. For anyone that isn't aware of who Chinua Achebe is, he wrote the book Things Fall Apart, which became a trilogy of sorts. And he's a Nigerian author who is post-colonial. He has written on various topics. He gives a few speeches now and then. And he wrote about things like the racism in Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, as well as the way African literature is viewed, and decolonization and post-colonial studies. So that's his kind of background, and he's very central to promoting a re-evaluation of Nigeria and its cultural history, which I think is really fascinating. It's a very fascinating topic. And when you look at the kind of growth of Nigeria in the last kind of few decades in different areas, it's quite fascinating. It's got a very big film culture, for lack of a better word. It produces quite a large number of films, and there's many, many athletes making it in some of the biggest sports around the world are coming from Nigeria at the moment. So there's quite a few NBA players that have Nigerian backgrounds and moved out of Nigeria in the last, you know, 20 to 30 years, now playing in the NBA. There's also quite a few with Nigerian descent whose parents moved to the USA and are playing in, about to play in the NFL. They've, you know, been quite strong in soccer for a long time too. So I think understanding Nigeria as a country is important for all of us in general, but Chinua Achebe is also really good at showcasing kind of the history of the country and its struggles that it's kind of gone through in more recent years, or not more recent years, but the way we should reevaluate its struggles over the last 20 to 30 years. So yeah, definitely if this is someone you're going to be interested in teaching any of his texts at any point, I would strongly recommend looking up the history of Nigeria and learning more about it first, because it's central to all the things he writes about. And yet he doesn't just specify Nigeria necessarily, but it's a bit, you know, as any good text, it's a bit broader and more applicable to different situations. Some of his short stories are quite confronting as well, the things he writes about. But Things Fall Apart is a really good book. I really enjoyed reading that. And maybe I'll reread that and actually do an episode on that later on this year. That's actually a really good book. I should reread that. Anyway, so let's move on to these two poems. The two poems I'm going to talk about, if you're familiar with them, great. If not, they're not overly long. I'd strongly suggest you do have a look at them. The first one is Mother in a Refugee Camp. The second one is Vultures. Now, Mother in a Refugee Camp is, I think, a really well-crafted poem in terms of its structure and form. I think it's quite dense in how those things happen, and yet the ideas are a little bit more straightforward, quite understandable by students. The name is obviously a bit of a giveaway as to what it's about, Mother in a Refugee Camp. It is about a mother who has had to watch her child die while living in a refugee camp, and how she kind of goes on with, or doesn't go on with her life, but kind of how she comes to terms with that and deals with it. And it's quite an emotive poem. It's quite sad. It's a poem that you'd need to know your students before you bring it out and give it to them. I think there are some difficult language components to it, but I have taught it to students with developing language needs and that typically would be lower ability or have not really been interested in English that much. And yet you get into it and they all kind of appreciate how sad it is. The tone definitely comes through and there's enough in it that they can kind of connect with, which is good. So I think it works for a lot, like a wide range of students. There are not many students I've come across that I wouldn't do this with. What I would always also caution with a poem like this, many people have students that come to them from refugee backgrounds. They could have easily been in refugee camps, and it may not necessarily be an African type refugee camp, but elsewhere in the world, it is something just to be mindful of, because it could be quite upsetting to them. at the same time, I've had students before that have willingly shared experiences and talked about some of the things they saw and what it was like. And I think that also is a good opportunity to make it real for students. It's very culturally inclusive. But what it comes down to is that first teaching standard, know your students and how they learn. If you don't know your students, this is it could potentially be a problematic poem. And yet I think it's a good opportunity for, even if maybe you don't realize some of these backgrounds of students, for them to get a bit more, feel comfortable with some of these things, as long as you're not, you know, obviously, I would hope you're not anyway, but talking about things in a ridiculous way or with a lack of compassion kind of approach towards it. But it also allows other students then to understand more about these backgrounds of students. So we've had, you know, as I said, I've had a few students that from refugee backgrounds that with this poem have had no problems. They've willingly talked about it. They've talked about their experiences. And these students come from all parts of the world. So some from places like Burma and Southeast Asia, as well as students from Middle East, and also students from parts of Africa, including Ghana, Sudan, Uganda, and even Nigeria. These students have really responded well to this poem, particularly the Middle Eastern and African students especially. They've really engaged well with this poem, and as well as Vultures. Whereas there are many other poems, I think, that the Southeast Asian students have appreciated a lot more. And maybe I'll do another episode about those at some point too. But I think there's plenty of options out there, and they fill a really good void. And Achebe's work is so, so wonderful in terms of its language use, that even depending on whatever approach you want to take, I think this poem, you could study it in so many different places. I think it'd be a really good one for reading to write. You could do it with advanced and get into depth, both of these poems. I think you could do it potentially with a novel as a supporting one. You could do it with a series of short stories. So this is where we kind of do it. We have a wide range of differentiation around these poems. We do it kind of, you have a large scope within this unit of the poems you pick, and yet, you know, we all kind of pick similar ones and discuss within the faculty and repeat poems from year to year, because that makes it easier for us, obviously, with planning and preparation, but also in terms of when we teach it, we're familiar with the poems. But basically, we can kind of have a scope to replace poems with issues from around the world. So there's scope there to go into post-colonialism if you want, depending on the students you've got. So I've done that in the past. I'll probably do it again this year. But also you can go slower and you can pick topics that students are interested in. It gives them an opportunity to explore poems that they find interesting. But also it's a good opportunity then for expanding into students that, you know, can handle more complex ideas in poems and the language around that. Whereas also students that might need a more spoken word poem. And there are a couple of songs that we discuss every now and then putting in there, but we tend to avoid doing the songs at times because often the language is a little bit less dense and it's a little bit more straightforward, and it's not going to extend some of these students that need it. But that being said, there are definitely some good ones out there. I've taken parts of King Kunta by Kendrick Lamar, who, you know, you can always throw in there the fact that, hey, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner. So he's got a few poems, but obviously you've got to be wary of the language with some of those. But King Kunta is good because you've got quite a large number of allusions and metaphors throughout it, and you don't have to do the whole thing. I think it's a good poem. It's, you know, obviously that cliche of, ha ha ha, rap is the new poetry, etc., etc. But that's why we try to avoid doing those songs, because it does become that cliche. But definitely that's one. There are one or two Bob Dylan ones we've used before. I've done a few other Australian ones as well, depending on who wrote them. So Treaty by Yota Yindi is one I've done before. And what's the Paul Kelly one? Oh, From Little Things, I'm not really a big fan of. I know other people have used it, but I don't really like it that much. I think it's quite repetitive, no, like very straightforward. If you're going to do it, I would rather, the way I've done it before is just pick out the verses, focus on those, and then just use the chorus kind of halfway through and at the end, because it's a little bit redundant. Anyway, but back to Mother and Refugee Camp. So that's a bit of context of where we've done this with. As I said, you can do some, we do short stories with it sometimes too, and other different things. So it really gives a wide scope for adjusting as needed to students. And it's just centered around issues that have shaped our world. It's very much about the social side of these texts and the role of English within the world, which I think is a very important thing. And when we get to some of these concepts that are in it, you've got so many that are covered, but it also gives students a better understanding about some of these issues and why language is so important. It's good when you've got some slam poems and performance poetry that go with these things too. They're really good to study in this unit. There's a couple that work really well. So yeah, I think Mother and Refugee Camp is a good text that's very applicable. But if you are a bit wary of refugee students or students with potential issues for this to not be quite a sensitive topic, then Vulture is another one, but it's a little bit more dense and tricky to get into, so students tend to struggle a lot more with that one. But Mother and Refugee Camp, let's get into it. So I'm not going to read through the poem for you. You can look it up yourself. But in this poem, it's about, as I said already, a mother whose child is dying within a refugee camp. And there's connections to... So it kind of starts off early in the poem with "no Madonna and child could touch." So it has kind of these religious, biblical allusions throughout. But also... it continually just talks about the care and compassion this mother has, but also how it's kind of out of her control what's happening. She doesn't really have it. And so it's a wider reflection on she's the one that suffers and yet she hasn't been able to do anything about it. And so you get into, this is where you've got those points of entry for different students. You can talk about just the literal kind of mother-child relationship. Go a little bit further if you want to about the deeper issues being explored about war and civil war and conflict and the consequences it has on people's lives. So I think there's good space there to talk about either of those things. But all the way through, it kind of looks at some of the experiences that this mother and child has about the suffering that they go through, the effects on the body that's happening. It talks about rust-coloured hair and the lack of food that they have. Which, as I said, it can be quite an upsetting poem. It's quite a sad poem. But I do think it's important that we don't shy away from some of these things sometimes too. And it's got lines in it about a ghost smile. But it's actually written in kind of the reverse order as well. So the ending of the poem is more about earlier in their lives when the child was a bit healthier and kind of as they're getting to the point of entering the refugee camp, then the middle, so that's at the end of the poem, but then the middle of the poem is kind of their experiences within the camp, and then at the end of the poem it's about the death of the child. So it's kind of told in reverse in some ways, and you can kind of break it into three chunks and reverse the order, and it changes the meaning of the poem slightly, but yet not at all. It's more about the form of the poem, so it's a good poem also that you can get into the form and how ideas can be represented in different ways and experimenting with language. And this is what I'm saying. There's a lot of different places you could go with this. So it's always worth spending at least a full week on, depending on the level of your students. It's a good opportunity also then, you know, have essay writing, but also compositional responses, whether it's narrative or something else you want to do with it. Students typically really engage with this one a lot because there are some really concrete images and things they can understand, because it's things they've covered off in HSIE before as well. But also it's a topic they realise is quite important these days. They see it and hear about it on news and social media. So I think this poem has a lot to offer. It's full of all sorts of language techniques. You've got symbolism and metaphors and allusions, as I've said. But the form itself is quite important. And I think there's so many different areas you can go with it that... yeah, you can really engage different levels of students in different ways. So that's Mother and Refugee Camp, but I don't want to spend too long on it because, again, you kind of need to look at it yourself. But it's got some concrete imagery, visual imagery, and it's quite loaded with techniques while also not being over the top. As I said, you can kind of interpret it at different points and get into different levels, and therefore the analysis you can do with students can vary. So if you've got students that are developing their analysis skills of poems, you can just focus on the more concrete ideas within it. But as I say, you can then expand a little bit outward and go into more the metaphorical figurative ideas behind it. And then you can go further analysis of the post-colonial side of it all as well. So that's Mother in a Refugee Camp. Vultures. Vultures is a lot more dense. It's definitely in the conversation of one of my favourite poems of all time, though. And it is a tricky one to teach to students. It's one that I won't do as much as Mother in a Refugee Camp. I think so many students struggle with the complex ideas within it and the multi-layered meaning of the poem that it's really hard for them to grasp what some of these ideas are. They pick up different parts of it, but because of the complexity of the ideas that are being presented and the layered meaning within it, students struggle to pull apart the different interpretations and the different components of this poem. So it's one that you really have to go slow with, but essentially what this poem is about, we start with these kind of, well, we don't start with these kind of vultures, we start with vultures that are sitting there, and obviously it's got telescopic eyes and it's looking at this, they're looking at this feet, this meal they're about to have, this body that's dying in a gutter, basically, on the side of a road in a ditch. And then it kind of expands into, well, this is actually colonizers eyeing off this land of this place where they see it's easy picking, something for them to just come in and have their, like, take what they want from it. In a way, similar to vultures, they pick off, like, the bits of meat that they want. And then as we get further on, we then talk about a commandant at Belson Camp, which is a death camp, and we have allusions to World War II and about the way bodies were treated and the role of war and colonizers in general. And then at the end, we also see this commandant who, even though he's committed all these atrocities, also has this kindness for his own child that he buys them a little treat on the way home one day. And it's this contrast that we're getting between, we have these individuals that make actions and decisions and there's almost no humanity and compassion within them, and yet at the same time we can see them treat others with kindness. And so Achebe is really asking us this question about, why is it that this is what happens, that we have these people that they have, and there's a line in it that there's a tiny glowworm of hope or lightness in the dark caverns of their heart. That's not the exact quote, but it's along those lines. And he kind of gets, this commandant gets compared to kind of this hideous creature. I think it's an ogre off the top of my head. I should have checked that before. But yeah, it's an ogre or a troll, one of the two. And how such a hideous creature, terrible creature that just causes pain and suffering on others, also at the same time has this really nice, pleasant, supporting role within a family. And Achebe is really kind of asking us, how do we reconcile these two ideas? It's quite problematic for us because lots of people have to do these jobs. And where do you draw the line of, is it their job? How do you stand up? And I think it's a good option too to get into a lot of the issues around World War II. So they didn't try everyone in the Nuremberg trials, for instance, because, you know, there were so many people complicit in it, and it's a complex issue, but how do you resist without support from others in an authoritarian state, such as what Germany was under Nazism? And if you're the train drivers, for instance, the train drivers taking prisoners to these death camps and labor camps and concentration camps, they were complicit in it, and yet what do they do? Do they just stop the train because there's guards over there, you know, and the guards are doing their job, they're doing their job, everyone's afraid, and that's because you don't know who you can trust, and that's part of how these governments and societies work. But that's part of what I'm saying is that, well, okay, we've got all these different people that are committing atrocities. Where do you draw the line? How do you stand up to these things? And it's something I touched on in Jojo Rabbit 2, way back in episode 1. Go back and listen to that. These people, how do you acknowledge them as humans when you know some of these bad things they've done, and yet they're not entirely bad? No one ever sees himself as the bad guy, really. And so, yeah, this is one of the big questions that Achebe is asking. He goes, you know, are vultures really the bad guys when they're just trying to survive and do what they think is right? But at the same time, they're such bad omens, and when people act like vultures, it makes the world worse. And he's really just providing a commentary on some of these issues. The language is just beautiful. Some of the imagery of the opening stanza. It talks about the broken bones of a dead tree. It's just phenomenal. It's quite a, it's less confronting in many ways than Mother and Refugee Camp because it's less direct. And yet I actually think it's in many ways much more touching and emotionally complex. But as I said, it's actually harder for a lot of students to get into some of those issues. They'll get to a certain point and they'll go, okay, the vultures are the colonizers and it's causing these problems. And we're making a comparison also to people that their morals can be questioned. So they'll get kind of get a very, as much as you can for this poem, a basic understanding, but there is no entry level. There's at its simplest form, you just have this idea that vultures are bad and picking on people weaker than themselves or people that can't defend themselves. That's about as far as it gets. Beyond that, students really need to be able to analyze poems at quite a high level. And so this is not one I would do with students that struggle with language, students that are struggling with analysis of ideas, unless you take them, like if you take them through Mother and Refugee Camp and they handle it really well, then maybe get into vultures. But it's one that I think can be quite difficult because there's this layered meaning to it. And that's before we even get into the context and allusions that are going on. So there's quite a lot happening there. But as I said, the students I do it with, they really admire it. And I've seen some great visual representations of these two poems. And they really start to understand what the purpose of a lot of poetry is. That, yeah, these wouldn't work as songs because the emotional tone of them and the layered meaning just isn't usually possible. And so I think it really gives most students an appreciation, at least, of why poetry is important, which is always a good thing. And I think that's where these poems, and if you can find similar ones, there's plenty out there. But these two especially do a really good job. So Chinua Achebe, hats off to you. You've done a great job with your life and your work. But these two poems especially, Mother in a Refugee Camp and Vultures, I think they are really good points for differentiation, but also bringing the real world to what a lot of students just kind of write off from what I've seen. Sometimes you get like large groups of students in years, and fortunately I'm at a school where we don't have too much resistance to poetry. I think because we've got good teachers that teach it well in an interesting way in year seven, so their experience of poetry much more fun and enjoyable. But, you know, it definitely does provide a challenge to some students, and yeah, it opens up a lot of doors, I think. So in terms of some of these textual concepts, there are so many different things. You've got like symbol and image and connotation, genre, audience, purpose, argument is in there, which is just incredible. Character, not so much. Code and convention, though, absolutely. Point of view and perspective, because we've got these different perspectives, especially vultures, where you've got this guy that's, you know, he doesn't see himself as the villain, as I said. So that's something that we can get into. You can pretty much teach almost all the concepts. Narrative, even with Mother and Refugee Camp, reordering the narrative, as I said, putting that last section at the start and vice versa. So I think there's a lot of opportunities here with these poems. You can kind of build units out from them if you really wanted to, or if you find other texts that these support really well. As I said, some novels or films, they do a really good job of that. You could do it. I wouldn't do it with anything less than at the earliest year 9. I'd do them with year 10s. But as I said, you could easily do them with year 11 as well. So these are some ways I would recommend you use two of Chinua Achebe's poems. And I'll be back in a moment with War and Peace. And the final segment, as always, is War and Peace. The update. I need to make notes, I think, because I really do lose track of exactly where I get to with the previous episode. I'm still on track, which is good. I was worried because I had a busy end of the week where I knew I wouldn't be able to read it on the Friday and Saturday, that I would stay on top of it. But I did, which is great. I'm very happy about that. So that's always good. I think I actually read an extra chapter this week as well. So that makes me feel pretty happy. I'm moving through it. I'm, you know, a quarter of the way, a bit more now through it. So I'm quite happy with there. There's a chance, I think, if I'm right, I'll actually finish it around October, if I'm correct, at this current pace, and if I can get ahead a little bit more still in, you know, when the times arise. But I'll see how that goes. So I'll be pretty happy if I do that, because that's pretty good, like only reading a little bit at a time. Anyway, that's just my progress. No one probably actually cares about where I'm up to with reading it, but it's you know, it, I guess maybe it makes it achievable if you've gone, oh, it's a long book. It's definitely achievable. So, you know, hats off to you if you get through it as well. But we're starting to see some love triangles and complex relationships about love. It's interesting in that, so we had a duel and that was about a love triangle, and then we've got another guy who was interested in a female character and she rejected him. He was obviously scorned by that. And so this female character, Sonia, she was instead in love with her, or she was adopted, but with her brother, Nikolai Rostov. They're not actually brothers, brother-sister, but he was not necessarily accepting of the way she felt. She wanted to kind of have that. And so it was a little bit complex there in terms of their relationship. And so this man that was rejected, he then took kind of his anger out on Nikolai Rostov a little bit through making bets and gambling and trying to... It was implied there was some cheating going on, but regardless, Rostov gambled away a lot of money. But we've also got a couple of other love triangles happening and proposals where the women are predominantly saying no, or there's another man who basically is separating from his wife. So we've got a couple of different entanglements, and I think it's a good parallel to the actual war, the more romantic wars that we're getting in this book. I think it's interesting there. So I like where it's going. I think that we're looking at these kind of different contrasting ways. I'm still interested to see where the piece will come through. And I think maybe I'm getting into it now, and because the title's a bit general. So, you know, people go like, what are you talking about? You're an idiot. You're missing all these things. I'm like, maybe I am, but I'm kind of giving a very surface level treatment here. But there was a part where it's like, well, winter's nearly over, so we're back to fighting season. And I think that's kind of where it's coming into it, that you've got, for Russians, this winter where you have peace because no one's going to fight you in winter. We know that. It's very difficult to do that. But outside of those times, you're defending your borders. So you've got war, and in times of peace, you're at war at home. And I think that's where a lot of this irony is about. And yeah, irony that when you're at physical war, you're at peace at home, but when you're peace in the battlefield, you're at war at home. And I think that's kind of where it's going. And I think it's very good. I like it a lot. Definitely makes me want to read more Russian literature. Scary proposition that it is. But I think that if that's an aim each year, just read one more, and then in between, keep reading some books. There is another novel I'm working on. I made a lot more progress this week than I had for a couple of weeks because I just hadn't really got around to it. So I'll finish that. And maybe, as I said earlier in the first segment, I will try to get through Things Fall Apart again. Might talk about that. I don't know if it's necessarily something I would teach at a school, but I'll have to read it and have a think. Anywho, that is it from me for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Do consider those two poems of Chinua Achebe, as I said. And I think I will maybe add a third segment about ad of the week if I see one that is worth my time. There was one that popped up, actually, Friday night. Conan the Destroyer came on TV, and I'm a big Arnie fan. I'll when I get through all of Arnie's movies, I've only got about 8 that I've never seen before. So when I get through all of them, hopefully I can do that this year, I will do an episode on Arnie's films because I think they're a work of art. I really love them, and I understand exactly why people are critical, but anyway, in that episode, you'll see exactly why I love them and what I think they're great for. But anyway, so Conan the Destroyer was on. So it's 1984 sequel to the 70s movie Conan the Barbarian, one of Arnie's first feature films. So this was Conan the Destroyer is just before his other ones. But anyway, during this movie, it was on at 10:15 at night, so quite late, getting towards midnight, they're showing ads for Barbie. I'm like, this is just weird. It didn't make much sense. So, you know, I had a friend, a guy I used to know at least, who did work for the ad programming. So he would basically got to decide what the ads would be shown during which things, and basically just have to fill up the chunks. So he did this for SBS for a while, and then he went to Channel 7. And he happened to be at SBS when they had the World Cup. This was several years ago now, so not the most recent World Cup, but before that. And Tour de France as well. So he's like, this is peak season for SBS. It's their big window. And yeah, he really enjoyed that. He managed to go from there to 7. And he said that with SBS, you're pretty much filling every ad break. If it goes for about 3.5 minutes, you've got to get the right number of ads. And they might say, yes, there's a couple of requirements where you must put in this sponsor of, for instance, Tour de France, this sponsor of World Cup, and these programs that SBS is airing. That's their requirements, which leaves you about 2.5 minutes to fill each ad break. So you just pick the ads there and put them in there. And obviously, if you pick the right audience, that's going to be better. So the advertisers have a role there. However, when you went to Channel 7, this was a little bit trickier, but easier at the same time. Trickier because bigger network, more money involved, but also at the same time, during certain times of the day, the promoters were paying a lot more to appear during certain shows. So you know that some of the reality ones sponsored, you know, My Kitchen Rules and MasterChef, those sort of shows, the Coles Woolworths Wars sort of thing happening. But yeah, he said that, you know, that was good in a way because you had less times to fill, but at the same time, you had to kind of be much more careful with it and make sure you got it right, because advertisers, you know, were not then going to pay if they don't think there was kind of recognition of their worth being done. So I feel like a Barbie ad appearing at, would have been about like 10, later than 10:30 at night, because there was, you know, a big chunk. I don't think it was in the first ad break. So the second ad break, so sometime after 10:30, there was an ad for Barbie. Just bizarre. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about the ad itself, but it is something that I think I might add a third section each episode now. So we'll have the core text and then War and Peace update and an ad somewhere in there as well that I'm going to talk about if I think of one. So that may be a recurring segment, but not a weekly segment. Anywho, that is it for me. Thanks, everyone. And I'll catch you next week. As always, you can find me on Twitter at edudavetion, EduDavetion. Hit me up there. Let me know if you listen to the podcast. It's available on more platforms now, which is great. Still working in that lucrative Apple Podcasts availability, but it is on Google now, not just Spotify, Anchor, as well as a couple of others. So if you search for it, then hopefully you find that on your preferred platform. If not, well, I guess Spotify, most people have that these days. If not Google, if not Anchor, they are all free. Thank you, everybody.